Welcome to the FBCLB podcast, where you'll find the preaching of Dave Delaney, pastor of the First Baptist Church of Long Beach. Thanks for listening.
Verse number 1 to verse number 13, we see the response of God to Moses. He says this, he says it repeatedly and simply several times throughout the text. He says to Moses, I am the Lord. I am the Lord. I'm God. I am in control. Not Pharaoh. I am the Lord, and I am doing what I want to do, not just in your life, Moses, but also in the life of Pharaoh, in the life of all the Israelites, and in the life of the Egyptians. So verse 1 to 13, the response of God to Moses when Moses was complaining to God on why Moses could not be used. Verse number 14 to verse number 27, verse number 14 to verse number 27, look how verse 14 starts. And these be the heads of their fathers' houses. And then he runs with a genealogy of sort of Moses' family, in particular, the family of the Israelites. So 1 to 13 is the record of God, or the response of God. 14 to 27 is the record from God. And so Moses is saying, God, here's all the reasons why you cannot use me. Here's all the reasons. I can't speak well. The Israelites won't listen to me. Pharaoh no longer knows me, right? All these reasons. I don't know who you are. And over, God has answered every one of Moses' excuses. And then Moses decides he's going to be obedient to God. He goes into Egypt. And on his way in, you'll remember, man, God strikes Moses. He almost dies. Moses then purifies himself, right? Zipporah helps Moses and Moses' children become right in the sight of God. And then Moses marches into Egypt. And when he gets to Egypt, Pharaoh doesn't go, oh my goodness, we've been waiting for you to get here. Please take our workforce and leave. No, that's not what he does. And Pharaoh makes the burdens more, takes away the straw. He makes life difficult for Moses. The Israelites begin to complain against Moses because everything is going wrong. Okay, God, I'll do what you say. Now everything starts going wrong. And one of the responses from God is to give Moses this record. And that's really verse 14 to 27. And that's where we're going to spend the bulk work of our time this morning. But you'll see, it's just name after name after name of the people in Moses' family tree. The people who were leading to Moses, but also the people who lead out from Moses. And God is showing Moses that he is a part of something. Moses is a part of something that's much bigger than himself. It's more full than even Moses himself understands. And then you'll see verse 28, 29, and 30. That's really the final outline in the chapter is the renewal with God. Moses covenants to do for God all that God asks him to do, to go to all the extremes, fulfilling the plan of God on Moses' life just the way that God has asked. You say, well, Pastor, why call this faith to faith? Well, why call the sermon from faith to faith? And I want you to see where this idea is coming from. It's Romans chapter number 1, verse number 16 and verse number 17. Romans chapter 1, verse 16 and verse 17 is the New Testament idea of what we're seeing happen in Moses' life. Romans chapter 1, verse 16 and verse 17. Here's what Paul says. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith. For as it is written, the just shall live by faith. So Paul has given us a snapshot of what the Christian life looks like in the long term. How the Christian life plays out in the long term. Okay, so graduation season is upon us. And when you graduate from high school, you graduate from college, you graduate from whatever, you know, training or institute you're graduating from. When you graduate from school. You don't graduate from school to school, right? You don't graduate from school to school. That would basically be middle school graduation, okay? Middle school graduation, it means absolutely nothing, but you have several more years of torture in high school. That's all that means, right? From school to school. Congratulations, you made it to 13. Way to go. Now, welcome to the rest of your life, you know? But everyone else is graduating from something to something, right? Graduating from this. This is what's happening here. From faith to faith. Right, so that the Christian life is a continual journey of faith. Right, so you say, well, Pastor, when do I get to be done living by faith? When your faith is made sight. The only time your faith is made sight is when you see Jesus Christ face to face. Right, so every other journey through your Christian experience is from faith to faith, from faith to faith, so that you're constantly being stretched, you're constantly being pulled, you're constantly walking. We've said this phrase over and over. You're walking into deeper water and deeper water and deeper water for God and His namesake and His glory alone. From faith to faith. Okay, so when does Moses, going back now to Exodus 6, when does Moses finally get the answer? From faith to faith. Everything that God is doing in Moses' life is taking him from a point of faith to another point of faith to another point of faith to another point of faith, causing Moses. This is what you're going to see all the way throughout the rest of the book. You're going to see Moses going from one point of faith to another point of faith. Why? Because the just live by faith. That's why. So all that God is doing in you, all that God's doing in your family, all that God's calling you to, what should it be? It should be pulling us from faith to faith. And so doing more for God and good, stretching ourselves for God and good, giving more in times of need, doing all these things. Why? Because we're being stretched in our faith from faith to faith. From faith to faith. And that's really what happens here. From faith to faith. Moses is seeing this, however, he's seeing it not necessarily in the work in which he's doing it, but he's seeing it in the response that God has given to him. Okay, so look with me, verse number 14. Exodus chapter 6, verse number 14. Here's how God teaches Moses what God is doing in Moses' life. Here's what he does. He reads a list of names. You ever been to a graduation of like 8,000 students or something ridiculous like that, you know? And they're reading, it's like hours. They're just, and you have a kid and he's in the, you know, he's got a Y last name, you know, like the Youngs. And you're like, I'm here all day. I can't even slip out early. At least if it were a B, you're like, okay, I was here and I slipped out when they got to the B. But you get the Youngs, the Wilkersons, you're there all day. You're never getting out. Man, W, all the way to the end. Man, just endure to the end, you know? My name, Delaney, that was early on. Man, we got out quick. Hey, see ya, we're gone. First four in the alphabet, right? You watch these like long things and they read these long lists of names. And what happens when you're at graduation? It always starts off interesting and then you get bored really fast. That's what happens. You're listening to somebody's name and you're like, okay, cool, that's wonderful. And they go, well, graduated with honors or, you know, 3.8 GPA or 4.0 GPA, you know, GPA. I mean, all these things, right? And you're going, who cares? It's just this long reading of a list of names. I'm here for one person. Let's just get to the graduation party already. Can we skip the ceremony and go right to the party, right? All graduates, flip tassels, walk out. Let's go to the party, right? But they're reading the list of names. What does this do for us? The reading of the list of names does very little for the people who are present, right? Does very little for the people who don't have a graduate necessary. But man, when those names are read, when those individual names are read, there is a story behind every name read. And if you had, man, if you had John Smith in your English class and he was just a terror, and you're the teacher of the English class, when John Smith's name is read, you're like, shoo, we thought that would never happen. And you're like, praise the Lord, we graduated him, right? And why? Because there's a story behind that. Right? And your mom, your dad, and your little boy, your son or daughter, they're graduating, and you're going, man, that graduation represents countless hours of homework, countless hours of reviewing spelling tests, actually doing their work for them, but passing it off as if it were theirs, you know, giving them my old science project to submit to the teacher. All these things, right? It represents so much more to the parent than it does to just the casual attender at the graduation ceremony. Why? Because it's just the reading of a name. The name doesn't mean a lot to you and to me, but there's a story behind the name. That's what's happening here. God is saying to Moses, Moses is going, woe is me, life is rough. It's not going like I thought it was going to go. And God is going, I'm moving you from faith to faith, and what I'm doing in you is bigger than you. And here, let me show you by reading you a bunch of names. Isn't that funny? Let me show you what I'm doing by reading a bunch of names. So let's look at the names. Look at verse number 14. And these be the heads of their fathers' houses, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, Hanok and Palu and Hezron and Karma, and these be the families of Reuben. Okay, so he's giving you an understanding of the family tree and the firstborn son, Reuben. And here's his four kids. And here are their names. Here are their families. Okay, look at verse number 15. And the sons of Simeon. Okay, another branch off of the tree. And here are the sons of Simeon. Jemuel and Jamin and Ohad and Jacob and Zohar and Shaul and the son of a Canaanitish woman. These are the families of Simeon. Okay, so another family tree, another branch comes off the tree, and here's the second-born son. The best kid in the entire family is the second-born kid. Thank you. Thank you, all the second-born children, thank you very much. Okay, here they are. He's giving you a list of names. Here's the family. Look at verse number 16. These are the names of the sons of Levi, the third-born, according to their generations, Gershon and Kohath and Merari. And the years of the life of Levi were 137 years. Okay, so hold on. Now we get more insight to Levi than we got into the older two. We weren't told how old Reuben was. We weren't told how old Simeon was. But we're given a snapshot into how old, how long Levi lived. Look at verse number 17. Here are the sons of Gershon, Libni, and Shimei, according to their families. So now we're getting Levi's grandkids. Well, we didn't get Reuben's grandkids. We didn't get Simeon's grandkids. But we're getting Levi's grandkids. Okay, so look at verse number 18. The sons of Kohath. Remember, Levi's sons, who were they? Gershon, Kohath, Merari. Okay, so now you got Gershon's kids. That's verse 17. Verse 18. And the sons of Kohath, Amram, Izhar, Hebron, Uziel, these are the years of Kohath, 133 years. And here are the sons of Merari, Malachi, and Mushi. These are the families of Levi, according to their generations. And now verse 20, another branch, another member of the family. So a great grandson to Levi. And Amram took him Jochebed, his father's sister's wife, and she bare him Aaron and Moses. So now you're to Aaron and Moses. Okay, so you're getting the great-grandchildren of Levi are who? Man, there's the main characters in our story. It's Moses and it's Aaron. Okay, do you remember what Moses is saying? Moses is saying to God, I'm not worthy of doing this job. Me no talk well. I can't do this. Okay, who am I? Who are you? And all these reasons, all these excuses that Moses keeps giving to God. And now God is answering Moses by saying, here's who you are, here's what I am doing in your family, and more than here's who Moses is, God is saying, here's what I am doing in your family. So here's what I'm going to do. I want to go through this genealogy, and I want to show you a couple of really big points about God. How God reveals himself to Moses through what Moses, what God is doing in Moses' family. How many of you like me, you feel like your family is a little bit dysfunctional? Let me see. Just slip your hand up. Your family is just a little bit, just not normal, right? I mean, just not, I'm not for sure what a normal family is, but I'm pretty sure mine isn't, right? That's, how many of you would say that? Raise your hand. Not one of those Baptist hand raises. Not like that, okay? That, I saw that, right? I like one of these. Okay, good, good. Everybody else is lying because they all think their family's weird too. Okay, so here's what God is doing. In the middle of Moses' complaining, God is teaching something about the kind of people that God chooses to use and about the way that God uses them. Right, so you have an outline so you can follow along. You say, Pastor, what does this long list of names, what does it teach us that's so important for us to learn that God would write it in His Word? Okay, a couple things. Number one, the Lord does what He pleases. Write that down. Number one, the Lord does what He pleases. Let me show you how this looks. He does not choose Reuben, the firstborn. He does not choose Simeon, the secondborn. He chooses Levi. He's going to send a deliverer through the thirdborn son, and not even through Levi himself, but through Levi's grandchildren. He's going to send a deliverer, not the firstborn, not the secondborn, but through the thirdborn son. This is not the normal custom. Man, it was the oldest son who got the inheritance. It was the oldest son who got the birthright. It was the oldest son who got the blessing. Remember Jacob and Esau doing this arguing, this bickering, this negotiating back and forth over what? Over the birthright. Man, over that family blessing. And here's God who's saying, it's not Simeon, it's not Reuben, it's not the people that everyone else thinks that it should be, but it's the people that I choose to use. In particular, I'm choosing to use the descendants of Levi, which is why you have Levi's grandchildren, great-grandchildren, even great-great-grandchildren, but you don't hear of the grandchildren of Reuben. You don't hear of the grandchildren of Simeon. You don't hear of anyone else's grandchildren except theirs. Why? Because God does what He pleases. God uses who He desires to use when He desires to use them. It is to say this, that God moves and arranges things the way He wants, when He wants, because He is God and we are not. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if there is a Pharaoh in Egypt when there is a God in heaven. It doesn't matter that there is a firstborn in order for which you're supposed to give the birthright and the blessing. It doesn't matter that there is an order to family birthrights and blessings when there is a God in heaven. This is why He repeats all throughout the text, I am the Lord. I am the Lord. It's God announcing, it's God summarizing, hey, I am in control and I am doing what I want. There is no God beside me. There is none like me. I am the Lord. I do what I want. Okay, another thing about this is not just theological in its nature. This is not just God saying, here's who I am, giving Moses a picture of His character or nature. This is God actually delivering to Moses pastoral care. Well, why? Because Moses is saying, woe is me. I'm a man of unclean lips. Who am I? I don't even know who my family is. I grew up in Pharaoh's house. I'm known as the son of the daughter of Pharaoh more than I am known by my own family's name. I don't even have ties to my own personal family. I'm closer to them than I am to my own kindred. Moses going, woe is me, woe is me. Here's why I can't. Here's why I shouldn't. God, You've got the wrong guy. And God is going, no, I don't. I am the Lord. I do what I want. Hey, listen, friend, God does what God wants to do. Who gives counsel to the Lord? That's what Job asks. Who gives counsel to God? No one. Because He's God, and as God, He gets to do whatever He likes. God does whatever He pleases. God establishes whoever He chooses to establish. Why? Because He is God, and we are not. So in your life and in my life, Who has the real control? Who has the real say? Here it is. It's God. The Lord does what he pleases. God gets to do whatever he likes. Why? Because he's God. And that's a very important understanding of nature, the character of God. It's very important that we come to grips with that when we think about what is happening even in our own individual lives. When we think about what's happening, what's taking place in our own individual lives, man, the financial news we got, the medical news we got, the relationship news we received, and we can, like Moses, go down one of those roads, woe is me, woe is me, woe is me. And yet God brings us back to this. No, I am the Lord, and there's no one like me. God does what he pleases. Number two, the Lord is patient. So number one, the Lord does what he pleases. Number two, the Lord is patient. Look at verse number 16. Look at verse number 16. Here's the years of the life of Levi and the very end of verse number 16. The years of the life of Levi were 137 years. Look at verse number 18. And the years of the life of Kohath were 133 years. Look at verse number 20. And Amram took him Jochebed. And the years of the life of Amram were 137 years. Now think about this. God is doing something in the life of the Israelites. God is doing something for the Israelites, but look how long it is taking. God is doing a good work, but he's doing a good work over a long stretch of time. Okay, this is not how we think, is it? God thinks in centuries. We think in days. Okay, God, here's my prayer request. I would like for you to answer it by Wednesday, please. I really need an answer by Wednesday. And then Wednesday come, we don't have our answer. Okay, fine, I'll give you to Friday, but no later than Friday. And God is going, well, let me check my calendar. Yeah, I'll get back to you in 3 centuries from now. Right, 137, 133, 133. And seven, I mean, God says, I'll get back to you. Then God is doing something, but what God is doing in your heart, what God is doing in my life, man, that's the long road of obedience to God. That's the long road of faithfulness to God. You say, I want God's blessing in my life, and I want to know what God is doing in my heart and in my life. And here's the answer. You might know it in 130 years from now. You go, well, that's disappointing because I was really needing an answer by today. I mean, I was really needing God to like summarize this thing. Man, 137, 133, 137. The other interesting thing about this is really, other than the name Levi, because the priests were of the tribe of Levi, other than the name Levi, probably the other names don't even sound familiar to you. Then look at verse number 18, Kohath. Anybody ever had a Bible study on the greatness of Kohath? Anybody ever remember seeing the coloring pictures of Kohath, like breaking down the lions and pushing over the pillars and killing the Philistines and wrestling the lions? Anybody ever seen a coloring picture of Kohath? The answer is no. You know, look at Amram. Anybody ever done a coloring picture of Amram? Like the good heroes of the faith. Who's your favorite Bible character? Daniel, David. Joshua, Amram. No one's ever said that. No one's ever done that. And yet, the great works that Moses and Aaron do are not made possible except through the faithful works of lesser known family members. Like, hear me on that. You do not know who Moses and Aaron are if Amram, Moses and Aaron's father, and if Kohath, Moses and Aaron's grandfather, were not faithful themselves. Had Moses' grandfather and father, Amram and Kohath appropriately, had they not been faithful themselves, then you and I would not have been reading about the faithful work that Aaron, the great exploits, what Aaron and Moses had done themselves. So hear me, friend. Hear me, mom and dad. Sometimes The value of a life is seen in the lives that come from that life. Sometimes the value of our lives will not be known until decades from now, when our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren are brought up, raised, taught, trained in God's word, according to God's law, when we ourselves perhaps did not have that. Man, sometimes it's not our individual contribution to the work of the kingdom. Sometimes the greatest contribution we make to God and to good is the investment we make in the lives of boys, girls, sons, and daughters, maybe not even what we ourselves do. Oh, that God would use us as parents to raise young men and young women who go on to do greater things for God than we ever dreamed possible from ourselves. Hear me. Oh, that we would raise sons and daughters who would go on to do things for God and good greater than what we ourselves ever dreamed possible. Oh, that God would call my sons and daughter to the mission field and use them for His purposes there. Oh, that God would call your sons and daughters to the mission field and use them to build eternal works and use them to build kingdom works for His own name's sake there. Greater than anything that you and I could ever do, greater than anything that you and I, sometimes the greatest contribution you can make is into the life of a boy, a girl, a son, or a daughter. The other thing about this that I would tell you is this. Doesn't this look very ordinary? So-and-so married so-and-so, had kids with so-and-so, so-and-so married so-and-so, had kids with so-and-so, so-and-so married so-and-so, had kids with, doesn't that feel very everyday? That feels just, it feels a little bit plain, doesn't it? Like if you think of the great passages of the Bible, if you think of the great books of the Bible, if I asked you after church, what's your favorite book in the Bible? You'd say Psalms or Romans or John. Maybe some of you would go, Revelation. That's Miss Doris's favorite book. She told me I have to preach in the book of Revelation, right? We say, what's your favorite book of the Bible? You wouldn't go, the Chronicles. I love endless genealogies. Like, it just gets my blood boiling. The book of Numbers, all those begats, that is moving stuff. My life verse, so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so. It just really gets me going. Like, when I wake up in the morning, it's not Psalms for me, Pastor. It's not Proverbs for me. It's the Numbers. Those are some good books right there. No, you come to Numbers in your Bible reading, you skip over it. There's no Bible quiz team that has ever studied the book of Numbers. Why? Because it's begats and begats and begats. That's all there is, right? It's so everyday. It's so ordinary. And what does this teach us about our God? It teaches us that God is doing a good, patient, long work in our hearts and lives, 133, 137, 137. 3 centuries later, God's plan is coming to fruition in the life of Moses and Aaron. And yet you would not know of Moses and Aaron had Moses' father, had Moses' grandfather, had Moses' great-grandfather not been faithful to God. Hey, listen, oh, that we might learn this lesson as a church. On the eve, on the Sunday eve of the 125th anniversary as a church. You know what that means? 124 years ago, a group of people decided we want to claim territory for God right here in Long Beach. And here's what that tells us. There's some of you that are really old, but none of you are 124 years old. Brother Miller is very close. I think the closest. What that tells us is God's been doing something here long before we got here. Hear me. And Lord willing, our contribution to what God is doing here will cause it to last long after me and you are gone. Amen, Pastor. Keep it going. That's good right there. Thank you, David. I appreciate the help. The Lord is patient. The Lord Listen, number one, the Lord is... I forgot my first point already. All right, number one, the Lord does what he pleases. I knew it was a P word. I just couldn't get to it. He does what he pleases. Number two, the Lord is patient. Number three, the Lord is personal. I got to be done on this one. It's almost six. The Lord is personal. Okay, here's what it is. This is the Lord recording name after name. He's watching and recording, and he's watching and he's recording. And it's birth and it's life and it's birth and it's life. Look at verse number 21. We stopped at 20. Look at verse 21. Here are the sons of Izhar, Korah and Nephag and Zikri. Here are the sons of Uziel, Mishael and Elzaphan and Zithri and of Aaron. He took Elisheba, the daughter of Aminadab, the sister of Nashon, to wife, and she bare Nabab and Abihu and Eleazar. And it's just birth after birth, death after death, marriage after marriage. And the Lord is sitting above and in the heavens watching all of this. And what is he doing? For hundreds of years, he is recording and he is remembering and he is acknowledging and he is recording and remembering and acknowledging and recording and remembering and acknowledging. The Lord neither slumbers nor sleeps. He has not been asleep for the children of Israel. He is not now currently asleep for the children of Israel. He will not be asleep for the children of Israel. He is at work and he is doing a great work through the lives of what seems to be very ordinary. The ordinary nature of every day, waking up, going to work, punching the clock, putting up with the boss, coming home, doing the yard work, doing the laundry, washing the dishes, fixing the car, helping the kids with the homework, making the bed, and all of it's on one continual loop. And yet in that everydayness, God is doing something very extraordinary. Watching and recording and watching and recording. So hear me, mom. And I get the laundry is this tall. I understand, but hear me. God neither slumbers nor sleeps. God is watching and recording, and he is watching and recording. He sits above it all. He sees it all, and he knows the full impact of it all. You want one more? One more. And then two for next week. One more. The word, the Lord works powerfully. It's almost unseen. Look at verse number 15. Look at verse number 15. And Shaul, the son of a Canaanitish woman. So immediately when you hear that phrase, you go, wait. The children of Israel were not supposed to marry people of other tribes. The children of Israel were not supposed to intermarry with people of other nations, of other tongues. They weren't supposed to do that. Well, why? Israel, God did not want Israel to worship the people of other nations and tongues because the people of other nations did not worship him as God. And what God knew is that if Israel intermarried with people who worshiped other gods, that Israel would go after their gods. They would go astray. They would be led into idolatry. And so God says, listen, don't marry someone who does not worship me after my name of my tribe. Why? Because you'll be led astray into idolatry. And isn't that what happens? Read the book of Judges. The entire book of Judges is how Israel is led into idolatry through all these extracurricular relationships that they have. Look at verse number 20. And Amram took him Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife. Think about that for a second. His father's sister. He's his own uncle. That's what that means. You think your family's messed up? Like every family get together, they wanted to know, is Amram coming? Because it's just, he's his dad's brother-in-law. That's what he now is. There's some deep South stuff happening right here. I was in Mississippi last week. There's some deep South stuff right here. Okay, it's just a weird intermarrying. You watch this. You go, well, Pastor, my family is so dysfunctional. My family isn't like your family. Listen, the only kind of family that God can use is a dysfunctional family. Because all of us are sinful men and women. All of us have sin in our lives. And in that sense, all of us are dysfunctional. And God has the only family God can use is a dysfunctional family. Listen, God does not put these things, he was his own uncle. He married the Canaanitish woman. God does not put these things in the text to put these guys on blast. God's not putting this in there to cause their businesses to be shut down or so nobody would hire them after this is made known. God isn't doing that. What God is doing is God is going, look at the kind of people I use. Look at the kind of people I use. Look who I used to get Moses and Aaron to where I wanted Moses and Aaron to be. Look at the Lord works powerfully. This is an indication of God's love, grace, mercy, and his love, grace, mercy being extended to people who find themselves in dysfunctional places. But this is also a commercial about the way that God will cause all people, all tongues, all tribes to one day bow down and worship him. That's what he's doing. He's giving you a snapshot, just so you know, I'm not just at work in Israel, I'm at work in Egypt, I'm at work from the Canaanitish women, I'm at work from people who married their own brother's sister. I can use anyone. Those are the kind of people I love to use. Hey, listen, friend, don't allow your family situation to be your excuse for why God can't use you. So carefully and pastorally, we walk into this and we want to affirm this. We want to know that, hey, listen, we want strong families. We want a strong church. If you have a strong church, you have to have strong families in the church. And so we always want to back up to that. We want to say, listen, we want strong families. Dad, be a spiritual leader in your home. Mom, be a spiritual influencer in your home. Sons, daughters, be spiritual sons and daughters in your home. We always want to hold that this is the way God intends for us to be. This is the plan God has for us all. But then we also want to come alongside of that. Simultaneously, we want to drive up next to that. And we want to go, but we remember, all of us are sinful. Okay, so yes, this is what we long for. Yes, this is what we look for. Yes, this is what we want. But at the same time, we recognize that all we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way. And yet the Lord laid on him, on the Lord Jesus Christ. God laid on Jesus the iniquity of us all to show us, to commend to us, to prove us, to us, the love that he has for us. The Lord works powerfully, and the Lord can work powerfully even in your own family dysfunction. Aren't you thankful for that? The Lord works powerfully, and the Lord is so powerful that he can even work through bringing about a deliverer for Israel through the dysfunction of these Israelite families. Why can he do that? How can he do that? Here's how. Because he is the Lord and he can do what he wants. Because he's God. And his love knows no end. And his grace knows no boundary. And his mercy knows no depth. Aren't you thankful for that from our God?